Before we get into today's episode, let me tell you about patreon.com/the Delvin Cox Experience. There, you can listen to episodes 2 days earlier, as well as get exclusive shows such as So Tell Me, an introspective podcast by my crazy life, hosted by Chalfie, the D&D podcast, an entertainment podcast with Delvin Jr. talking about all things pop culture, On Shuffle, a music podcast hosted by Mike Fowler, and much, much more. So go to patreon.com/the Delvin Cox Experience. That's patreon.com/the Delvin Cox Experience. I want to give a special shout out to Patreon producer Mikey Famin, host of the Ben Podcast and Dig on America. Thank you. This episode for the Gun Control Conversation, my guest is John Jamingo, host of the Boomer Bunker podcast, the Rubberneckers, Brand X, and numerous other podcasts. John is a Second Amendment absolutist. John talks about the ability to protect yourself with guns, his opinions on laws on guns and things like that. I think it's an interesting conversation. I don't think everybody agrees with his point of view, but that's what we're here for. We're here to hear different sides of view on the subject. Let's make our own opinions on it, and then, you know, then we can go from there. And I think it's very important to have these conversations so we can know the other side or both sides of an argument. Hope you listen. Hope you enjoy. Welcome, everybody. Continuing the podcast with me about this big conversation about gun control and things like that. I have the man, the myth, the legend, host of the Rubberneckers podcast. And what's the other podcast you're part of, John?
The Boomer Bunker and Brand X.
Brand X, which was Boomer Bunker. Brand X was around for like a minute, wasn't it?
It was around for four. We did 2 years, and then we took a 4-year hiatus, and now we're back doing it once a month. It's a lot of fun. It's with a guy that I went to college with. We have a great time. That's what podcasting's all about, in my opinion.
I agree. John Bucatus is on the podcast. Finally, it's great to have you on, John. You've been somebody who's eluded me. Not by choice. It's not like you've been avoiding me or nothing like that. It's just our paths always crossed on other podcasts, but not necessarily each other's until I want to say this year.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, you know, like I said, I never invite myself onto somebody's podcast. If I'm here, if you want, you know me, I'm not hard to get a hold of.
Yeah.
So if you want me to come on and talk about anything, I'll come on and talk about anything.
And I think this is the perfect conversation to have with you about. We're having a As you know, we're doing a conversation about gun control because it's a heated topic. Funny that it's a heated topic almost every year around this time. Yes. But I think it's necessary for us to have these conversations to get an insight on what people think and to hear both sides of the gun control debate. Because we, have some people who say you should get rid of guns completely. We don't need guns in America. We have other people who say that the Second Amendment is one of our most important rights and we must defend that to the death. And then we have people who are more like, probably like me, I'm kind of in the middle. I understand the importance of gun control, but I also understand the importance of us having the right to access any weapons we shall choose, as long as we're responsible with those weapons.
Exactly. So I agree with the same thing.
I was going to get to that. So, John, what is your opinion in general on gun control?
I am a Second Amendment absolutist. And why I say that is, everybody wants to say that it's a, or not everybody, people say that it's about hunting. It's not about hunting. It's not about shooting clay. It's not about that. It's about the ability to protect yourself, yourself and your family, and from any enemies, foreign and domestic. And that's what I feel about it. They say that you don't need an AR-15. Well, they're not even what the, you know, the military or the police or anybody else carries. And if things pop off, I don't want to have a six shooter. I don't want to have a double barrel shotgun. I want to have superior firepower. So I think that everybody should be first responsible gun owners, not just everybody. It's not the Wild Wild West.
Yeah. And I think that's an important thing that you said there. Why do you think the conversation has become so tainted in terms of, like, nowadays it's more of an extreme. It's not like it's now kind of become the conversation of either you have guns or you don't have guns. Why do you think that's a thing now?
Well, I think a lot of this country lives in areas where you don't need them, to be honest with you. It's a suburb or something like that. They have the police department. There's not a lot of crime. There's not a high rate of crime. But there's other areas where there is a lot of a high rate of crime. And, you know, you need to be able to protect yourself from people breaking into your house to try to steal your things. You know, material things can be replaced. But, you know, it's not that they're just going to come in and maybe they will, maybe they won't. You don't know until, you know, so you should. I think this is what I always say. Everything on the outside of this house belongs to them. Everything on the inside of this house belongs to me. We won't have a problem as long as you don't have to, as long as you don't try to come in here, then we won't have a problem.
I like that answer. Let me ask you this, because let's get a little bit more into it. You're a registered gun owner, John?
Yes.
How long have you been a registered gun owner?
I had my first gun at the age of 14 was when we were allowed to start hunting in the state. I'm in New Jersey. I bought my first gun at 18. And I don't own an AR-15, but that's not about me. It's about people's right to be able to, you know, if I wanted one, I would want to be able to buy one. And what I just want is something that I can protect myself with from here. The thing that I have a problem with is that every time there is a mass shooting, that they jump on this gun thing. And not one time do I think that this would have changed anything, because the people that are causing these, that are doing these mass shootings and in these high crime, they don't care about the laws. Most of the people, even if they bought the gun legally, have broken several laws just getting to the place to, you know, gut the schools are no gun zones. Well, they walk in with a gun. So you can make all the rules you want. And then the other thing is, with these red flag laws, you have to be careful, because it's the same thing. If you have a girlfriend or an ex-wife or something like that, that says you threaten them with a gun, and next thing you know, they're over there, they're removing your guns, and you have there's due process, but it can take a long, long time. And meanwhile, you know, they've disarmed you, and it, good luck getting, and how much money is it going to cost you in lawyer fees to get it back? So that's the thing that I have to worry about.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Because I think you touched on several interesting and good topics that we can touch on briefly. But let me go to this one first. How do you feel in general about gun control? Do you think America as a whole have a gun control problem? Do you think we need to handle it when you see these mass shootings and things like that? Do you think it's something that can be preventable? I know I've asked multiple questions there. But
okay. I think if we're going to go to mass shootings, like in schools, I think it 100% can be taken care of if we protect the schools like we protect courthouses and Congress. All right. So in other words, you have armed security guards, you have metal detectors. You know, where I used to work, I spent a lot of time in the inner cities, and I used to go into a couple inner city schools. And back then, you would have to, you know, everybody would have to walk through the metal detectors. They had like 12 of them, and every student walked through those metal detectors every day to go to school. Now, if we protected every school like we protected a courthouse or, you know, any other major government building, there'd be no way to have these kind of shootings. I just think, I mean, if we go to the Texas shooting of the elementary school, that was horrific. I mean, what they did there was horrific. An act of cowardice like I've never seen before through law enforcement. I mean, it's horrible. So, but the fact is that if you just beef up the security, we can stop that. Now, in the malls and the supermarkets and stuff like that, that's a little bit tougher. But again, evil people are going to do evil things. If people were if some people had been armed in that store and they were near the front, it could have been stopped sooner. I don't know. We don't know that. But in New York, you know, they have the strictest guns. New York State's one of the strictest gun laws in the country. And that guy walked right in and just started shooting people in a supermarket, which is horrific. Nobody wants that. Gun owners don't want that. We, you know, we're all appalled by all that stuff. We just have different ways of handling it.
I agree with that statement. I think that I don't think you can argue the heinous acts that are committed by these people who are using guns as their tool to commit these acts. And I think both parties, whether you're Republican, whether you're Democrat, whether you're Libertarian, whether you're somewhere in the middle, we all can agree on that. I think where the problem lies at is how to solve the problem, or at least, because I don't think you can ever solve a problem in terms of gun control, in terms of a situation like that. That the cat's already out the bag. You can't go to the extreme of, okay, we're going to take everybody's guns away. That's not a thing that's going to happen. No matter how many people say that, most people who own or gun owners are not giving up their guns. If somebody would say something that drastic, I don't think.
I really, to be honest with you, if to me, I think it's a cultural problem.
Okay.
I think ever since Columbine, you have a bunch of, not a bunch, but you have people that see this and they have an issue, whether they're bullied in school or whether they're a loner or for whatever reason. And they feel like that's the way I'm going to go out. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make a name for myself. It's all, you know, I do think that the kid that went to Texas and shot up and killed those children in the elementary school, I think that was suicide by cop. He knew he was going to get it. And he was just doing until he just was killing people until they came in and got him. He never left there. He didn't try to shoot it out with them in the hallways or anything like that. So, I mean, it's a cultural problem. We never, ever thought in when I was going to school, I had a shotgun in the back of my car half my junior year and all my senior year, because we used to go duck hunting. Before we went to school, we'd come out, we'd take off our camouflage and we'd go to school, and the gun was in the back of the car the whole time. We never, even if you got into a fight, even somebody really beat your butt for whatever reason, you know, you'd never think to go out and grab a gun and come in and shoot them. Never. I don't know. I don't know where that started as a thing, you know, where you can come back at that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's fascinating how that works, because even when I was going to school, and I went to school in the inner city, the 4 years of high school I went to, there was only one shooting there. And that was my, I want to say my 11th grade year, and it wasn't even on campus. What happened was there was a girl skipping school with her boyfriend. You know, like back then, I don't know if they still do it now. I don't think they do. They had it with my school. They had where you could go out for lunch. Like, you can go anywhere you want to for lunch, as long as you're back by X time, like let's say like 11:50. So the young lady went for lunch and decided not to come back. But she was sitting in front of the school with her boyfriend on a bus stop, because I guess they want to go somewhere, things like that. Car drove by, shot him, killed the girl. The guy lived. And because of that, my senior year, when I was leaving, it didn't affect me. But the year after that, they closed the campus. They didn't allow anybody to leave the campus. They took they got like McDonald's to come in and bring like a food truck, and other companies like Subway and stuff like that, to bring food trucks on the campus so the students can eat there. But they immediately shut that down. No going on or off campus after school. And they kind of had an armed officer like in front of the school every day. That was a thing. And my thing is this: why don't we see more things like that happen? Like, you have these mass shootings and things like that, and it almost feels like nothing is done. Like, it, not only on like the legislative side, but on the school side or any sort of avenue at all. It's just kind of like, okay, the shooting happened, we're done. We're not going to think about it anymore. We're just going to grieve and move on.
It's emotional. It's the emotion when something like this happens. It's like, we need to do something. And it's even if it's wrong. And I've had debates with friends of mine, and they go, I don't want my kids going into a school that's like a prison. Well, it's only from keeping people from going inside. So would you rather have what happened, you know, in Columbine, in Florida, in Connecticut, in Texas? Would you rather have that? Or would you rather have it where, you know, people, there's an airlock where you go in and both doors are locked. And when you come in, you have to show ID and there's bulletproof glass and they can't get in. And if somebody starts to come in or you see somebody approaching, it looks suspect, you hit a code and it goes 911 and there's drills. You know, when I was a kid, we had nuclear, you know, bomb drills where you had to go under your desk and tuck under your desk. Like that would even help. But so right now there is ways to fortify the schools. You have a lock on the door where you can just put something over the door if there's a situation like that, and then put something over the window so people can't see. They can't get in and they can't see who to shoot. So there's other things that we can do to fortify the schools and make sure that kids don't, you know, the kids don't, you know, that if they know what to do in that situation. The problem with that is the kids in school, we're training the kids in school how to get around it. So in other words, they go through the drills, they see what they do, so then they can figure out a way around it. That might be one issue that might be a problem, but we haven't tried it. They're never going to take all the guns away. It's never going to happen.
I'm glad you mentioned it. I think Dave Chappelle made the joke about that. Like, we're training these kids what to do when a school shooter comes, but the school shooter is in the class with them, seeing exactly the same drills and the same techniques, so it's kind of hard to kind of teach these students, hey, when something like this happens, this is what you do. When the person who most likely would do the act is in the class right next to you.
Well, the thing is that if you have, you know, if you have armed guards and teachers are carrying, all right, and they have all this stuff, then a kid's going to say, I can't do this. I'll never even, you know, even if I get a gun in the school, I might be able to get off a couple shots, but you never know where the teacher's going to come to defend this. And, you know, so it's a deterrent. A show of force is a deterrent from anybody that's going to attack a school.
Okay. Let me ask you this. I'm glad you brought that other topic up. How do you feel about teachers carrying guns in school? What's your opinion on that?
If the teacher wants to be trained, if the teacher goes through a background check and a mental evaluation, and they want to train and be armed to, you know, to ward off an attack, I have no problem with it. I'm not saying give every teacher a gun. No, people are afraid of guns. People don't want to have guns. But if there's somebody in there that says, you know what, I'll stand a post. If something happens, I'll run to the danger. And they want to carry a gun for something like that, that's fine. But it has to be on their person. It has to be in a holster where nobody can get it off them. And they got to, and you know, they have to be responsible about it. If someone knows that the teachers are packing, there's a police officer there, there's an airlock that they can't get through, all the doors are locked, are they going to go to that place, or are they going to go to a place where it says gun-free school zone and nobody's armed and there's no protection? Where are you going to go if you want to be a shooter and make a name for yourself? Where are you going?
That makes sense. I always wonder about these situations, these school shootings, because it seems, like I said, we've had them so often, and the conversation about mass shootings in general has ramped up this past year. And I feel like it did the same thing. Like I said, every couple of years, this becomes a conversation, a hot button issue, and it always seems like there's nothing to be done about it. I wanted to ask you, because you said something, I want to say I read it on Twitter, because somebody was arguing about gun laws and stuff like that. And you said something I thought was so interesting. I wanted to ask you about it. You said we have laws in place, we just don't follow them. So can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, background checks, being able to buy if there's an issue with a student like the shooter in Florida, he was a problem. He was a problem for a long time, and people knew about it. And there's no reason why someone shouldn't have went to his house, found out if he had guns, and taken away from him. The shooter in Texas, he was shown where he would ride around and shoot at people with a BB gun out of a moving car. He also was carrying a bag of dead cats around that he had murdered. So when you see these kinds of actions, these people should not be armed or carrying guns. Now, can they still get a hold of one? Sure. But I still think that, you know, if you have to have a deterrent. If it is a, if it's hard to do, people won't do it. Nobody's charging into a school that's armed, where the teachers are armed. They're, you're basically barricaded. Doors are locked. Nobody, no one's charging into those schools. The where I live right now, after the Texas shooting, they went and they did a whole security, basically overhaul update to see what they could do to make sure that things were changed, you know, things were changed to make schools safer. I think that has to be on top of everybody's mind. If I'm a school principal, every day I look at my school like it's going to get attacked that day. What can I do to stop the attacker? What if you think of that every day, like how you're going to stop an attacker? When it does happen, you're going to know what to do. It's muscle memory.
That makes sense. I wanted to bring up something else you talked about just a second ago. These young guys getting access to guns and the whole mental health aspect of this. Do you think, what do you think causes that? What do you think, is it social media? Is it bullying? Is it a mixture of both? What causes somebody to get to that extreme level where they like, I need to get a gun and seemingly get a gun easy, because a lot of these guys who get guns, in these cases, they've gotten a gun legally and done these heinous acts. So why do you think something like this would happen?
I go back to they're not trained. When I was growing up, my grandfather hunted, my father hunted, my cousins hunted, my uncles hunted. We all did it. So I couldn't wait till I was 14 to start hunting. And everything was safety, safety, safety. Every gun's a loaded gun, all that, you know. I think instead of being afraid of guns, everybody should be trained on them. It should be a class in school. You know, you take a BB gun or something like that. They show you how to carry it. They show you how to hold it, how to be safe with it. And this way you have respect for the weapon. You have respect for it. Right now, I just think that you have a lot of, I mean, I don't know if you're on Discord. I don't know if you are on Discord. But the thing is, you go into these Discords and you have these kids that are in there, and it's the wild, wild west in here, in there, because there's no, you know, there's no way of being harmed. What happens is they get in there and then they take it to the next level where they're going to go out and they're going to do something with it. And you see it all the time. I said the other day that, you know, in the Discord, the people that I know, there's three or four people that if I found out they shot up something, I would be like, eh, it doesn't shock me at all. Doesn't shock me at all. But do you turn them in? What do you do in that situation? I don't know. And here's the other thing. Half of them, they're not identified. You don't know where they live or what their real name is or anything like that. You couldn't find them. You couldn't find them with $100 bill and a postcard. You couldn't find these people.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good topic with Discord and just social media in general, because people, it's fascinating, because I think social media is one of the greatest tools ever created. But at the same time, it's one of the worst tools ever created, because you can get the internet in general, you can get so much resources from. And the fact that social media has opened the platform for me to talk to people like you, Jody B, and just so many people from different backgrounds and different races and different nationalities, and learn so much from them. So in the right hands, I think social media is a powerful tool to communicate and to learn things. But in the wrong hands, it can be deadly. Like, you have people going out there bullying people to commit suicide. You have people bullying people to go shoot out schools. Like for example, me and you are close to the same age. Back in the day, you get in a fight, you win, you lose, you go out the next day to school. They may mention it, but for the most part, it's over.
Pretty much, yeah.
Today, you get in a fight. The fight gets posted to Facebook, Twitter, Discord, everywhere. It kind of lives on forever, and you hear about this forever. Then you become the guy known for getting your butt whooped on Twitter or something like that, and that. To some of us who knows how to turn off social media, we can be like, all right, whatever, that happened. But to this younger generation who has that need for it, that can destroy their life.
And you say that. We just did a show. We did an episode of Rubberneckers where two girls got in a fight in school, and they had it filmed from 17 different angles. Everybody had their phone out. And the one girl got her butt kicked. All right. Now, it's two girls, so I don't think one of them's going to bring in a gun. But let's say it's just two guys. Two guys get in there, and one guy gets his butt kicked. And it's like you said, there's everybody's got a video of it. Now that kid's been emasculated. Now what's he going to do? Now, you know, me, if I was that kid, I would have picked up a chair and hit him with it. But that's me. I'm not going to go get a gun. You know, I'm not going to go get a gun or something like that. Today it's easier to get one, as a younger somebody. I'm okay with saying that you want to raise the age to 21, but if that's the case, if they're not old enough to handle a firearm, then they're not old enough to drink. They're not old enough to buy cigarettes, and they're not old enough to vote. So if you want to do that, then we do it for everything. They're not old enough to go into the military until they're 21. And that's the big problem. They want to be able to take them into the military. But anything else, no, they're too young. They want them to be able to vote, but they don't want them. But they're not responsible enough to do what I would consider adult things.
I always did think that was a little weird, where you could go into the military and fight for your country at 18, but you can't drink.
Can't drink, yeah.
That's a weird thing. Like, you can go buy a gun, and if something were to happen, you can end the life, but you can't go buy a beer.
So, you know, I go back, and then here's the other thing, the defund the police. Where they want to defund the police is where they're needed the most. I think that was a big mistake. And I think what's happened is in the cities, the best cops are gone. It's like, we don't need this. We'll go out to the suburbs. We'll make more money and have less crime and then have less problems. Now it's a free for all in these major cities. If gun control worked, then do me a favor, go in and take all the guns off the criminals in one city. Pick a city, go in and get all the guns off the criminals. And then I'll be like, okay, let's do that. Let's try that on another city, but they won't.
Do you think they won't? Well, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I think this is interesting that you said that. Do you think that the government doesn't do it because they have a vested interest in it?
I don't know why they don't do it, to be honest with you. I have no idea. I have no idea why you would want to take a city like New York or Chicago or, you know, Baltimore and any of these major cities and take and hamstring the police officers. Listen, there are bad police officers. The same way they're bad at people in any profession you have. What you need to do is weed out the bad police officers and then let the other good police officers do their job. Years ago, and I mean decades ago, I used to say the only people that can stop bad cops are good cops. And you can't just sit on your hands when you see something where you know a cop is a bad cop that's doing things that he shouldn't be doing. You got to weed them out, and it can only be done within the organization. And they didn't do that. And now we're in the jackpot where a lot of people don't trust the police.
You bring up a very poignant point there with that. I think you're right, actually. I think when you have so many cops that are bad, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a lot, let's just say out of 100% of cops, let's say 30% are bad.
That's a lot.
30%. Like, it's not as lot as many as you think it would be. But
I'm just saying, if there's 10 cops at an accident scene, 3 of them are bad. That's a lot of cops, if you ask me.
All right, we'll put it at 20% then.
Well, okay. Humor me. Let's go 3%.
Okay,
3%. 3% of cops are bad.
Okay.
All right, so then we work on getting them out of being a police, you know, get them, stop them from being police, you know, fire them, whatever you got to do. I have a guy that I know that his entire life, all he wanted to be was a cop. And I said,
My brother is that guy. 100%
want to be a cop. And he was the worst guy. He broke all the rules. He got in an accident and he drove the car home, and the cops found him because the car was leaking oil all the way. All they said was, oh, here was the accident. Oh, here's the thing of oil. Oh, we'll follow it right to his house.
My brother wasn't that guy.
All right. He became a cop. He washed out within 6 months. They knew it. They saw him. He was a probie. It was 6 months. He washed out. He went somewhere else. He washed out again. And I said, stop trying to be a cop. You're not a cop. You're the worst. You're the worst. And people knew this. I knew it. I said, why are you going to be a cop? You're never going to make being a cop. So he might be a cop now because they can't find cops. They're looking for anybody. He might end up being a cop because they can't find anybody else that'll take this. So what's going to happen now is they're going to have to take the cops that they wouldn't have taken before because they weren't good. And now we're going to, now maybe we do have 30% bad cops. Who knows?
Let me ask you this. Because I think a lot of things have happened these past few years. Whether you want to blame Biden, whether you want to blame Trump, I think both parties play a part into it. Where the distrust for cops may be as strong as it's ever been. Maybe since the 60s or 70s, when you had the civil rights movement and things like that were going on.
Correct.
How do we build that trust back into the police department? Because even now, like you said, this whole situation with the school that happened, where the cops were outside, that looked really bad on police officers. Really bad. That was horrific. That was terrifying. And the fact that usually when these situations happen like this, even with schools, political parties usually kind of put out their reason, like, okay, let's say, for example, Democrats, like, this is why we need to take away guns. Republicans say, this is why we need to have more guns. What the cops did was so bad, both parties were agreement in bashing it, which is something we don't see nowadays. Right. So how do we build that trust back in our police departments?
So one of the things that I see is how the police are portrayed in, I'm going to say, media, all right, whether it's through TV shows or something like that, and also in the news. The George Floyd incident where that guy kneeled on his neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. That was horrific. There's no need for that.
Yeah.
All right, the man's cuffed. All right. So, and whether you think he died from kneeling on him or whatever, it's bad optics and it shouldn't have been done. So when you see things like that, and that is thrown all over the news, or you see when the last name Castillo, I think it was in the Detroit area, or maybe it was Michigan, somewhere up in the Midwest of the country.
Yeah, Philando Castillo. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's sitting there and he says, hey, I have a gun. It's in my glove box. And the guy just opens up and shoots him. I mean, that's horrific. There's no reason for that. None whatsoever. And you see this and it's just amplified. And you don't see the good things that happen. They don't come out and show you the good things. So when you only see the bad, that's all you think of. And they just amplify. I'm not saying you shouldn't report on it. But again, I think that in a situation like that, okay, that was horrific what happened to George Floyd. Do we go out and riot and burn down cities and cause $2 billion worth of damage? Is that, don't get me wrong, I understand protesting and I'm for that. I'm just not for rioting and destroying things. So when every time a cop makes a mistake, you see that on the news, but you never see when a cop does a good thing or when he saves somebody or when he does a heroic thing. You never see that. It doesn't get the same coverage as the other ones do. So of course you think all cops are bad because that's all you see.
I think you're right. But to push back a little bit, not really, but I think it's because,
man, push back. Don't you go soft on me. You push
no, no,
back.
No, 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 not at all. My thing is this. I think we live in a society where people want to see the negative.
Sure. It sells.
It sells. So when you tell the story of the cop saving the cat out the tree, nobody gives a fuck. They don't. But when you tell the story of a cop being dirty, whether it's harassing black people or ending African Americans' lives or collecting bribes or things like that, that's the story they want to hear, unfortunately.
Listen, I can't imagine. I could never imagine what it's like to be a black person in America being pulled over by a cop. I've never had
the scariest thing you could ever imagine. I can tell you for experience. It is terrifying.
Right. Now,
even if you have everything right, like license, everything on point, terrifying.
Sure it is. And again, I unfortunately, how's it feel when a cop pulls over someone that's black or, you know, Hispanic or something like that, because they see stories of shootouts and stuff like that. So, and again, it's all over, but it seems to be that you're at a heightened sense. You're everything's heightened when during a traffic stop. That's why when I get pulled over, and Delvin, I'll tell you something. I've been pulled over a lot in my lifetime. I know exactly what to do. I keep my hands on the wheel. I keep my window down. I turn my inside light on. The officer walks up. Hi, officer. What did I do? Or officer, I'm sorry. I was speeding. You got me. And I said, okay. And my driver's license and my registration, everything is in my thing. I said, listen, I'm going to take my two fingers. I talked to him the whole time. I'm going to do this. I'm going to take this out of here. I have to get my wallet out of my pocket. I'm going to put my hand on here. I'm going to get my wallet out of my pocket. I talk to them like I'm performing surgery and I'm showing them how I'm doing it. I want him to feel as comfortable can be, where I'm not a threat. I'm not saying that should be taught in school. How to be pulled over by a police officer. Pull over and then record it and then show them how it's done. Maybe we should. I mean, Chris Rock did a whole skit on how not to be beat by, how not to get beat by the police. Maybe we should.
Yeah, I think you stumbled on something I think is interesting. I think it's true. I think there is this innate fear of minorities.
Sure.
And I think part of it, like you said, with police, same thing with police. The stereotypes that we see on television, whether it's the news, the media, it goes both ways. Whether it's police, whether it's black people, whether it's minorities, even whether it's white people, there's these certain stereotypes that we get from our media, whether it's CNN, Fox News, that we all kind of feed into. And because of that, it causes us to have our own prejudice. I guess that's the right word to say. Mm-hmm. I think that's what probably causes some of our biggest problems in our country today.
In terms of
you see a white guy, so people automatically think he has white privilege. Even if he's a trailer park guy who's broke and never had anything in his life.
Yeah. You tell me Jody B's got white privilege? I don't know.
He might have less privilege than me. But I think that's kind of the way it is. And I don't think things will get better in terms of that until we realize what society is doing in terms of like, hey, we're kind of putting each other against each other. And it's unnecessary. Like, there's no reason why you as a white man should be walking down the street and see me and be like, oh, maybe I should clutch my purse. Oh, I should see you and think you're going to try something slick with me. But that's what the case is a lot of times.
There's three times when I was working in Philadelphia where I had an issue, where I was one time almost jumped, and two other times I had to defend myself. It didn't get into anything. I kind of just, I got real big, got real loud. And let them know that, if this is going to go down, then I'm ready for it. And they kind of backed down. But one time there was three gentlemen in an area. And this was back before we had cell phones. So I stopped at a payphone to call because I was lost. And then they're like, hey, you come here. Let me talk to you. And I'm like, uh-oh, got to go. I need to hang the phone up, man. I dropped the phone, jumped in the car. And the only reason I didn't run them over was because they were fast enough to get away from the front of my car. I was terrified.
I can imagine.
So let me ask you this, because I've never had a chance to ask you can say
a black person, it's fine.
A black man. All right. So if you go into just an all white neighborhood, does that make you feel uncomfortable? Do you feel?
Oh yeah, 100%.
See, that's terrible.
100%. Yes, because you get uneasy.
Yeah.
Because they think you like. I am fortunate enough to be able to go shopping in areas because I have family, I have kids and stuff, and they don't like to go to like. They like to go to places like Sawgrass Mills, which is the big shopping center down here, mm-hmm. predominantly white area. So plus my kids are mixed. My kids are part Hispanic, part black. So my son legit, damn near your complexion. He looked like you with a tan. But
okay.
When he was a baby, he was snow white.
Oh, wow.
He was like a white kid.
Did you get a DNA test on that boy?
Yes, I did. But when I would take him places, especially in white neighborhoods, I would get these looks. And it was so uncomfortable. They would act like I kidnapped this baby. Right. And it was so uncomfortable, so unnerving. And I even got stopped a couple of times because of it. And they asked me, whose kid is this and things like that. It's terrifying. It's weird.
I can't even imagine. But I'm just saying, until we can figure out a way to not have that, I don't have an answer for that. I really don't. I don't know why. Listen, I've also been beat up in white neighborhoods because I was in the wrong white neighborhood, and I didn't know.
That is also a thing. Yes.
Yeah. I was two streets into Kensington in Philadelphia, and I was supposed to be in Fishtown, and I didn't know where I was because I was just over at a friend's house and we were just doing whatever, and we got our butts kicked. Three of us got our butts kicked by about six or seven kids. I'll tell you what, we never went back into that neighborhood again. So, this was when I was a kid and there was no guns or anything like that. It was just a good old fashioned ass whooping, which, you know, you can basically take every once in a while.
I was very fortunate because I grew up in, this is completely off topic, but I'll add this in for extra stuff. But this is cool extra content. When I was younger, I grew up in this era called Liberty City. And if you watch the first 48, it's often mentioned on there.
Oh, okay.
There are a few areas in Miami that's often mentioned on there. Overtown, Liberty City, and I think it's, what's another area? Carroll City. Okay. So I grew up in Liberty City. Because how I am, my personality, I was able to maneuver through Overtown and Carroll City with no problem because everybody knew me as the type of person. Like, that's Delvin. He's a cool guy. And these were gang areas. You know, they had gang situations and things like that. But when they saw me, they were like, all right, he's not into this. This is not his thing. Leave him alone. I think I only had one major situation when I throughout high school and stuff like that, where when I was walking home from school, some kids who didn't know me, I was walking my sister home from school, some kids who didn't know me, some with a Sony Walkman, and they came up behind me and bust a cinder block across the back of my head. And I guess the adrenaline from, because I was with my sister, and she was like, she's 5 years younger than me. The adrenaline from that gave me the strength to try to fight them off. So I'm fighting them off and telling her to run home, because we were 5 minutes away from the house. Fortunately for me, because I would have been dead. Apparently, a guy who, because this was on a main street, a guy was passing by, saw one of the kids pulling out a knife and getting ready to stab me. He got in the car, punched the kid, called the police. The kids ran off. And that guy said, if that guy wouldn't have got out that car and helped me, I would have been dead.
Yeah. See, where I live, it's very, very infrequent that something like that would go on. And so people that live in those areas, live in the suburbs, they don't have to worry about crime. So they're like, okay, we'll just take everybody's guns away. All right, and that'll stop it. But you're never going to take everybody's guns away. The criminals will not give them up because it's power. It's the only way that they can survive, and they know it. So it's not going to happen. And I think that we should do is just try to, like I said, just think what every day that school is going to get attacked by a school shooter, and then protect it like you should. And then we won't have any more school shootings.
Let me ask you this. We've touched on a lot of great topics, I think, honestly. Do you think there's any way we can get both parties to agree on some type of compromise that can satisfy the people, not the gun lobbyists? Fuck the gun lobbyists. The gun lobbyists want one thing I see, and it's more guns, more gun sales. But I'm talking more about the people like me, people like you, people like both sides. Is there some type of compromise we can reach where we can okay, this works for both parties. We're not taking away anybody's guns, but we're protecting our schools and we're lowering the risk of a mass shooting happening anywhere.
Delvin, I'll be honest with you. I don't think there's a law around that you could make a compromise to do anything. You're never going to stop evil. The Boston Marathon guys used pressure cooker bombs. They built pressure cooker bombs. So if you take away the guns, they'll figure something else out to use. Listen, I'm all about stopping mass shootings. And I would be 100% if I could think of anything that, you know, that maybe we could do to stop mass shootings, I would be for it. But even if I give I give you all my guns and I'll say, okay, guess what? I'll give all my guns. And every law-abiding citizen gave their guns up. There's still that criminal element that are going to keep them. And now we are at the mercy. And then the other thing too is, I've seen a lot of things that happened during COVID that I'm not crazy about that happened in this state that I live in and in this country, what they did as far as, you know, they just decided to lock you down and shut your job down and you couldn't do anything about it. The Second Amendment has nothing to do with hunting, has nothing to do with target shooting. I say this all the time. It's about protecting you from enemies, foreign and domestic. And whenever I say, you know, this is it. That Second Amendment was made to protect the people in case the government got overzealous and there was someone that was in government that tried to take everybody's rights away. And that's where it came from. And I believe in that. When they had COVID shutdowns in Australia, the cops had guns. Protesters did not. I mean, not that they should, and not, you know, they're out there peacefully protesting. But if every time a population, and I shouldn't say every time because there's been a couple, but there's a lot of times when a population is disarmed, millions and millions of people die. I don't know if I want to take that chance.
I think that's the perfect way to end this episode. I think that was great. Great answer. Man, thank you for coming on. This has been great. I thoroughly enjoyed this.
Anytime, Delvin. You know me. I'm always up for a good conversation.
Definitely. As always, we are out. Peace.